Hello everybody and welcome to the AntPod, where today we try to answer the question of how to raise and keep semi-clustral queens. By the way, semi-clustral queens is queens that need feeding before getting the first workers, meaning you can't just put this queen away in a drawer, you need to feed her and actually keep her from day one, which is very interesting and also not really beginner friendly. But with me today we have Lynn and Jake. Hello Lynn, I hope you're doing well. Can you please explain some of your stories of raising semi-clustral queens, both successful and unsuccessful?
Hello. Yeah, where to start? I think my first semi-clustral queen was when I tried Manica Rubida for the first time, which was before the challenges and everything were founded. But I just saw this giant red ants, and for some reason I didn't like Myrmica, but I did like Manica. Wait, did I say Manica or Myrmica? I don't remember, but I'm talking about Manica. And then, some people were talking about them, and I was like, oh, I'm going to get them. Well, I got a queen from a seller that was not really a good seller. So that queen passed away fairly quickly. Tried again, another queen, bought a brood boost for her to see if she would do better. She did better for a few weeks, and then she passed away. So there goes my luck. I did have a very beautiful colony of Myrmica rubra at the meanwhile, but I didn't raise those from a single queen. They were already up and going, so that's not really a part of the story, I guess. And then, of course, the Manica Rubida challenge came around and I wanted to join in. And then my first time on successfully keeping semi-clustral started, which I did pretty good with the first... How many queens did I have? 3 queens. Those are all... They all made it. And then the second year, 2 more queens and they made it. And of course, now I am raising the... The Myrmicas, no, the Myrmacias. Jeez, names. All with the M. Why do they all start with the M? What's going on?
Doesn't have to be easy. So, yeah, so your latest project is that you've now started keeping a Myrmecia as well, which is the next semi-clustral project. And so far, it's going well. More on that in the update in the end. Haha. I think definitely the big thing about semi-clustral queens is the founding stage, which we'll also be talking about today, but we'll also just talk generally about keeping them. But where a lot of colonies die or at these early stages, and hopefully, again, this is not a tutorial directly, but it's just our thoughts on how to raise them. But we also have Jake here, and hello Jake, I hope you're doing well. What is your experience with keeping semi-clustral species?
Over the years, I think I've had quite a few, mostly Myrmica rubra, because I'm a big fan of them. I've also got, I think, a lot of the small ants, like, I think they're quite semi-clustral most of the time. Although, I'm not really 100% sure. I do treat all of my ants kind of as if they are semi-clustral, to be fair.
And what do you mean with that?
I'll treat them, I'll give them food, like, every so often. But yes, I'm not actually sure. I don't know if, like, Polyrhachis, are they semi-clustral or are they clustral?
I think they're semi.
Yeah, I've raised a few of them, which has gone quite well until they all decided to die. So, like, mostly rubra and Polyrhachis and possibly some little species, but I have no idea really if they're semi-clustral or not because they're so small. I don't know. I don't know how it works down there.
To be honest, when I'm getting ants I don't know completely how to take care of, I also raise them as semi-clustral because, well, you may stress them a little bit with playing around with them, but overall it's not really a big thing. Like with my trap jaws, well, people say they're semi-clustral, so I treat them as semi-clustral, but even if people said they were fully clustral, I would still probably do much of the same. But yeah, I think a lot of people misunderstand the word fully clustral by saying, okay, I got this queen, she's fully clustral, let me put her away forever, and then they die. Because when a queen is fully clustral, that is where they're native, so they'll fly out, they'll build the nest, they'll get the first workers, and then that's it. But here in the ant-keeping hobby, we often import them. I can't remember who I talked with, but I talked with someone on Instagram, and he had honeypots, and he was like, well, they're fully clustral, so I haven't fed her. But I know at this stage, this honeypot queen have probably laid egg in America, then been flown all the way to Europe, And at this stage, she's probably running dry on her supplies with absolutely zero brood. So even though she's fully claustral, it's a good idea to, at least when you get ants, if you buy ants, to just feed them a little bit either way. It can harm. Well, you expose them to some stress, but overall, I don't think it harms. It does more good than bad. My experiences with semi-claustrals. I've kept my Makaruba, but I bought a big colony. I tried to raise 6 queens as solo at one point, and that was just a massive mistake. Everything went so bad. I've kept Polyrhachis Proxima, and she actually did quite well. I raised her from 2 larvae to... I think I actually raised her from X to 2 larvae, 2 big fat larvae. And then she ate both the larvae, even though I did weekly feedings. And I don't know if I did weekly or twice a week at that stage, but... Yeah, I joined the Manica experience as well on the second year, and 2 of the 3 colonies are raised and are doing extremely well. The 3rd colony I put in a jar of dirt, and she died in very quick manner because I never saw her in there. And now, of course, I'm keeping a lot of semi-clustered species like the Trapjaws. I'm trying to found the Trapjaws. I got a colony earlier with workers. Now I have 2 without workers that I'm trying out. One of them has larvae now, so that seems to be going well. I've tried with 2 different species of bull ants where the Nigroceps actually performed quite well, except she got mites, and then I started my whole mite treatment, which was just the worst idea of my life, except it got some views on YouTube, but well, it wasn't an outcome at least. But I actually think the Nigroceps queen was raised quite successfully because I got her without workers, and she had... Well, she only got 2 workers, but she had like 5 cocoons in the half year I had her. But then, well, a lot of things happened. But yeah, also keeping Brevinoda with larvae. She ate the larvae, raised them from X to cocoons now. And as well, I have the bullet ant, the Paraponera clavata, which is also semi-clustral. So I definitely, I'm all in on semi-clusterals, but that's also because they are a lot of these cool species are semi-clustral. Which I think leads us a little bit into the beginning of this podcast, because which setup should you use for a semi-clustral? Because you can't just use a test tube. Well, you can, but it's not the optimal way of raising them. And I sure have some pictures of how I know the Australians do it and how I do it myself. But starting with you, Jake, what type of setup have you put your semi-clustral queens inside of in the past?
Well, always I've used like little tube pods of some sort, or put them in a tubs and tubes. Kind of set up, but nowadays I just like I stick a little tube pod from Makushi on, and it's like ta-da. But it used to be like a lunchbox; they were always quite good, and I just stick a test tube in the lunchbox, and yeah, I think that's all I really needed at the time.
Yes.
And just chuck food in and have a really dodgy barrier as well.
Yeah, because the thing you need to remember with semi-clustral queens is you do need to feed her every week or every other week, which we'll talk about later. So that's for you. You need an outwell straight from day one. I do want to say it's not called the tube pot anymore. It's called the Luna pot. But yeah, it's pretty much the updated version. Lynn, what is your preferred setup to raise queens inside of?
Depends a lot on the species that I'm raising. For the Manica rubidas, I really enjoyed using bamboo tubes for them because they seem to enjoy it as well. It has high humidity, it has these rings inside, it has the gypsum, it supplies them with grip, it has like this sandy texture as well. So they really seem to enjoy that. And of course, I prefer to always give them an outworld right from the start so the queen can wander around if necessary. I've also tried a few times with or without sand, and it actually seems to, with the Manica at least, they seem to like to have sand around so they can actually build a little bit with the substrate if needed, like make the entrance smaller or put a little bit inside of the tube, stuff like that. And with the bull ants, I gave them the option because both queens still have a test tube outside in their outworld. But both of them have immediately moved into the nest when it was available.
Yeah. I think it's very well said that it's different from species to species. I've been down both routes. With my Manica, I went for pretty much what you just said, Jake. I went for the tube pod, which again now is called the Luna pod. And yeah, I put a little bit of dirt in the No, not in the tube. I filled up a little bit of dirt in the outworld, and the mannequin could thereon decide what to do. And she decided to take the dirt into her nest and covered up the tube quite nicely. And she performed well. I also added some springtails back when I made that setup. And now with all my different semi-colossal queens I've received, I have them pretty much in Wakushi nests with gypsum inserts. So the bull ant is in the Mimesia set. The bullet ant is also in the Mimesia set. The other bull ant and the trapjaws are in the founding set. And with all of them, it's nice because you have a gypsum area, which, just like you said, Lynn, with bamboo tubes, gives a grippy area for the workers to sit and the queen to sit. So it's not just a flat surface, it's not just a 3D printed. It's a little bit of more of a naturalistic look. And also, when you hydrate, it becomes a little bit more humid. So I'm a big time fan of gypsums. There's no way around that. I also added dirt to all of the setups. I actually removed the lids on all the setups, added dirt both in the gypsum area and in the outworld area. Some of the queens decided to clean it out, some of them didn't do it, but at least now they had the chance. Thanks to Wakushi saying you should add springtails to all the setups, I also did that. And surprisingly, quite a few of the queens are not that good at taking the trash out, and thanks to the springtails that are living in there, well, they are eating all the debris that are in there. So by default, I pretty much just add springtails to all my setups now, because with these gypsum nests, it's so humid that the springtails can actually stay alive and keep the nest clean. If you had a drier nest, the springtails wouldn't be able to mate and they would just die. So yeah, that's a little bit of my setups. Generally, I think a test tube pod or a lunar pod, these small founding areas where you can connect the test tube up, is good, but it also depends on the species. But I've already gone a little bit into the next discussion of whether you should have substrate or not. You've also gone a little bit into it, Lynn, but let's just go all the way around. Jake, would you recommend substrate for semi-colossal queens?
No, personally, I'd say, yeah, no. I just think a lot of the time the substrate, it just, you like lose food in it, and it doesn't take long for like little mites to be running around, and it might just be book lice most of the time, but I just don't like, it always seems to encourage mites in my setups.
Yeah, it's definitely scary. I'm not gonna lie, after all of my mites, I hate them. But I also like, as long as they don't sit on the ants, I take it calm. Like, as long as they're just in there, I don't care. When they're on the ants, I can't care. But that's where spring cells are great.
If the like larvae did need substrate, though, I'd chuck some in. But yeah, unless they really needed it, yeah, I wouldn't give them any.
No, that's also fair. It's fair. But yeah, like I said before, the nice thing with spring cells is they... Well, if there's mites and stuff like that, the spring cells can help fight eating the food before the mites will. Yeah, Lynn, can you go a little bit into details whether you prefer a substrate or not?
Yeah, I think I prefer substrate. With the bigger queens like the bull ants, also in the outworld, because it just gives a nice look, and because the outworld is completely dry, if there's any moisture left in the feeder insects when they put them outside, they will just quickly dry out, so there's no food left in them. I always, pretty much always used sand for my outworlds and inside my nests for the substrate. The Manica rubidas, they took the sand inside themselves, so I didn't need to do that for them. And I completely missed out on a queen because I failed founding her, which was my Pachy Condylla crassinoda, and she was also semi-claustral. In her case, I actually tried a lot of different methods to see if I could found her, but she failed all of those methods. And she had the cocoa fiber substrate in her outworld because she seemed to like it, very humid, but it didn't go well. She didn't found it. I couldn't keep her successfully.
Yeah, that sucks. I think over the past few months or few years, we've really seen a big development in keeping exotic ants and keeping semi-claustral species. Just the general information of the hobby has really improved. Even though we've made this episode, the last episode, is the hobby doomed, I feel like the community in the hobby is really getting good at sharing information across each other. So it just makes it so much easier for people to see what works and what doesn't work. Where the Manica experiment was also a brilliant way to showcase how to do things and how maybe what to avoid. But one of the big things you hear with semi-clusterals, especially with Harpignoth's Venators, with Bull Hands, with Trap Jaws, is should you do live feeding or not do live feeding? Should you feed them crickets, fruit flies, mealworms? What should you feed them? Is it alive or is it not alive? Jake, what do you feed your semi-clustral queens?
99% of the time, they'll always be boiled and dead. Although I am occasionally I'll chuck in a few living fruit flies into some of my setups, but only a few as well, maybe two or three at max, because any more and the queens end up getting well annoyed, and when they're kind of running around in the outworld, it's like, oh, sorry. So not too many of them, but yeah, normally like boiled, and if I can, I'll try and give them like smaller bugs, because I think in my head it's like, well, the smaller bugs will be easier to crack open and things like that. So if I'm giving them like cockroaches, I'll give them the smallest ones I can find and still break them apart. But yeah, that's about the only difference to like normal, really.
And can you see any difference? Does all of the colonies just take to this, even though it's not living?
Yeah, most of the time. Like, if they're hungry, they'll eat it. And if not, then, well, they can go hungry.
And how many times a week do you feed your colonies then?
If they're lucky, about twice, say.
Oh, damn.
They don't have to wait too long. Like, yeah. If they, like, run out of food, and they don't have to wait too long, or if they don't like it.
And yeah.
I'll watch it out. Sometimes, like, after a couple of days, sometimes on the third day, I'm a bit bad there. Like, you should only really leave it in for a day, but it's busy.
sometimes the cleaning can go a little bit overdue. But yeah, it's definitely important with semi-clustral queens to make sure that you feed them a lot. I think twice a week is kind of a must. I'm curious to hear what Lynn says in a second. Simply due to the fact that many of these don't have social stomachs. They don't have a big reserve of food. That's why you don't see... If you look at Alacious Niger Queen, she has such a big fat gaster because that's where she stores some of her food in her founding stages before she gets her workers. And when you look at semi-clustral queens, they don't have the storage, meaning they need to get food a lot, else they will die. I'll go to my thoughts in the end, but Lynn, what do you recommend? Live feeding, pre-killed food, and how often?
I would always recommend pre-killed. I've never live fed any of my ants. Well, not on purpose fed any of the semi-clusterals, not even the Harpagnatos or the Myrmecia. I always pre-kill, and I always primarily feed red runners, like the baby red runners to the Manica Rubidas, and the bigger red runners to the Myrmecia and the Harpagnatos, which is they are, it's easy to know when they're dead because they just die pretty much. And sometimes they have this little leg wiggling around, of course, and especially Peggy, the Myrmecia, seems to really like it when there's a little bit of movement, so she goes nuts on them. And I say primarily red runners because the other day I tried feeding a Dubia roach, and I'm not sure what happened. I didn't kill it correctly, apparently. And this Dubia roach ended up entering the nest, running around in the nest. And the bull ant was freaking out because there was, of course, a Dubia roach. It was a baby Dubia roach, but still, there was something in their nest. It was running around. Every time she went to it, it stopped moving. And Dubia roaches, they flatten themselves on the surface that they're on. So there's no way to grab onto them when they do that. She managed to kill it eventually, but it was a stupid situation. I'm never gonna do that again. Like, why would you put your ant, like, if they enter the nest, you know, the ant is the semi-clustral species, the queen, they're gonna try to feel settled inside of their nest. They wanted to be safe and everything. And then there's, because there's not enough space to run around, the feeder insect that you're gonna feed is gonna find their way into the nest and create havoc in there. So just kill whatever you're gonna feed. It's better that way. Of course, it's beautiful to see an ant hunting, but yeah, the stress, to me, it's not worth it.
Yeah, I can't argue with your mentality there, especially when you have vulnerable queens. Just live feeding is just very risky. But Lynn, how often would you then feed your semi-claustral colonies?
Depends on the stage of brood. Like Echo, one of the bull ants, she didn't have brood for a while. So I would just look at her behavior, see if she was interested in food or not, because generally they go into the outworld when they're hungry. They actually look for the food. They're active looking for the food, actively. And when I see them in the outworld, they will get like sugar and some protein, see if they like it. But if they have brood, if they have larvae or eggs, I will actually increase the protein. And with the other bull hand, Peggy, I actually gave her every two days a red runner, because she had, of course, she had the 7 larvae. And she really needed that as well. The whole roach would just disappear. It would be gone. It would be fully eaten in those 2 days. It was insane.
Yeah, but there was also a lot of larvae there. So it makes sense that they're hungry, especially because bull ant larvae are big. They need a good chunk of food. Yeah, what I've done is basically, I've never really live fed. I've done live feeding here and there, but I've never consistently live fed any colonies. I do it with my Venator sometimes. I give them crickets. I generally prefer just to give free kills, like for the reasons Lynn also said. It doesn't cause as much issues just doing pre-killing. Now, like you said, Lynn, the roaches tend to wiggle a little bit around depending on how you kill them. That's why generally when I feed roaches, I cut off the head, I feed dubious. And when you just cut off the head, the nerves are still working and they'll still almost be running around. At least they'll be wiggling. If you cut them down the middle, through the spine, you turn off the nerves pretty much. You serve the nerves. You cut away the nerves so they don't work. But when I feed my semi-claustral queens, I tend to do not cut them down the middle. So the nerves will still be twitching and moving around, but the animal will be dead. And that's how I ensure that they can somehow get a little bit of live feeding, because the nature, the sensitivity of the workers, well, the queens will react to the vibrations and all of this. So they'll be like, huh, something's there. Let me hunt it down. And especially my Brevinoda, she just stinks and stinks and stinks the food that's already dead. What I've also realized is a lot of these, some of them may be active hunters, some of them may not be active hunters. And I try to feed crickets to some of my ants. And what I tend to see is they may sting it, but they may not take it in and eat it. Because by design, they should know that to sting it and cut it up and eat it. But it's just so much easier when you have cut up a roach and the roach's fluids are just flying out. What happens often is you see a worker coming over or a queen coming over and, oh, there's some juices here. Let me just start eating, drinking. So even though the thing is not moving, they can clearly smell that there's food here. And they see the food and they taste the food and, they eat the food. What I've done for some of my colonists to make sure they get food is pretty much just take this pre-killed roach and just stop it into the nest. Just push it all the way into the nest. Hopefully push it not too long in so I can actually remove it. And that way I know the queens and the workers will find it. Now, I don't really do different feeding depending on whether they have workers, larvae, or brood at all. I just do the same all the time because, well, if they don't have any brood, the protein can boost them to get lay eggs. And if they don't have any larvae, well, the protein can boost them to lay more eggs. And now that they only have cocoons, well, the protein can boost them to lay more eggs. So I just always feed them quite a bit. So yeah, avoid live feeding at all costs. I think it's it's an outdated mindset of some species needs live feeding. I just don't think that's the case. Coming into the next topic here, we're discussing a little bit about what is best. Is a test tube better than a nest? Now, for my manicats, I actually had one of each. I had a white tongue nest from Aesthetic Ants and a test tube. But before we go into my thoughts, Jake, what would you say is better, a nest or a test tube?
It's such a hard question. Like, on the surface, it's like, oh, yeah. It's like, obviously, I don't know. At first, I'd think, oh, test tube, obviously. But, well, it isn't, because it's a little bit more difficult unless you've got some sort of pod to, like, feed them and such. Whereas a nest, you can, like, plug it into the outworld and just chuck the food into, like, a nice-sized outworld and all of that benefit. But you do run the risk, though, of it's normally water that will hammer you, but if you've got a nest, you can have an outworld and you can have a proper little drinker as well, which kind of cancels that out. So I think I'm leaning towards nest, to be fair, but a well kitted out nest. It's got to have kind of water, food, air conditioning.
So what is a well kitted nest for you then? Do you have a DIY or do you have a product in mind?
To be fair, I like the Antantics little, I think it's the tiny cottage or something. And I'm a big fan of that. It seems to be working out quite well for all my ants as well.
Quite tiny, right? How big is it?
Yeah, I think it's about maybe an inch wide and 3 inches long, maybe.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, what's that? 7.5 centimeters by 2.5 centimeters.
Thank you for translating.
But it's quite a cozy little one. It just seems to have worked with the other ants now. The Manica rubida, they've boomed in it. And I'm hoping the Pogona myrmex do the same.
What about you? Well, Pogona myrmex, of course, they're not semi-claustral, but the nest hopefully can help them perform some well as well.
Some species are. Oh. Although we could talk about that at the end, like bonus fact.
Definitely dropping that for you then, in your final words. what about you, Lynn? What would you say is the better choice? I know what you'll say. You'll say, it depends on the species. But still, Lynn, what would you say?
Well, that was exactly what I wanted to say. It depends a lot on the species. I did try around a little bit with the different stuff, like the Wakushi S2 starter module. I used those in the past to see if they would be beneficial. They are, unless you forgot to hydrate them. Bamboo tubes, of course. I love bamboo tubes. I actually love bamboo tubes for different species altogether, depending on what I have. I think, the most small nests, if you have a good small nest, they are actually capable of being used to raise semi-claustral queens in. So I would say that nests can be better.
I raised my Manica rubida in a test tube setup with a Luna pod, or the old test tube pod, and one colony in the aesthetic ants mini art world connected to the white tongue nest, the Ancon white tongue nest, so the very small one. And I pretty much gave dirt in both setups and followed along. And it was really cool to see, but overall, after keeping both species for half a year or more, I couldn't see a single difference in the nest compared to the test tube. Both of them were performing well. And I fed them and they had dirt and everything looked nice. They had a lot of spring cells as well. And in that regard, I can't see a difference. But it just seems like with all of my semi-claustral queens I have now, I'm using a lot of the Wakushi founding sets in the Gen 4 founding. It's nice because it's a compact setup that you can easily move them around. It's an all-in-one and it's just small. And again, I don't know if it's because... I don't know if maybe it's just I'm bringing the humanity into it. But it seems like the colonies just seem more relaxed when they're in a nest compared to a test tube. And maybe it's just how these, because they're a little bit more active and sensitive, they react a little bit more on vibration. But I feel like often when you move around the test tube, you can easily cause the queen, if she's sitting on the side, to fall on her back and be confused and get a lot of... Yes, because it's harder for them to get a good solid grip in a test tube where it's round and small compared to a nest where they have a little bit more space. Personally, I can't say one is better than the other because I haven't done any research that suggests that. Other than I think the ants feel more relaxed from what I've seen in a nest compared to a test tube. But it's hard to say, to be honest. Is there anything you guys want to go over? Well, that's one thing. How often should you feed semi-claustral queens honey or sugar, Jake?
Not too much. Not every feed, like I used to, like every time I'd feed, it'd be like sugar and protein. And then the Manica Rubida challenge came along and I've kind of tweaked it now. So it's more like protein and sugar. And then like protein and sugar now for pretty much all my ants. And it does seem to like boost productivity. It stops them getting distracted and full of sugar water. And every so often I'll look in at some of the ants there and it'll be like, oh, you look a little bit sluggish. So I'll give them a really big dollop of sugar just to get them all fully charged up again. And it actually seems to work sometimes. But apart from that, I kind of don't feed them crazy amount, and especially when they're tiny, tiny as well, it's barely anything because I'm always scared, and I've had so many queens drown before, so I always go steady, maybe with a bit of cotton ball and the tiniest little smudge on it.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say anything, but goddamn, Jake, I agree. Sugar, sugar, no, protein, protein and sugar, protein, protein and sugar, protein, protein. I currently do my feeds Thursday, protein, Sunday, protein and sugar, Thursday, protein, Sunday, protein and sugar. And then I remove the food after 2 days. It just seems like, especially with my bull and my Mimesia brevinota, he loves that sugar. Every time I feed her sugar, she goes for the sugar and just ignores the protein. So I know that on Thursday feeds, she just gets the protein. I put it down her nest, she takes it, and she puts it out of her nest again. So I know she's touched it, and I know she's been... At least she had the chance. But when I feed them sugar, I just see her sitting on the sugar and just loving that sugar. So I think that's a good idea not to feed them sugar every day or every time. And just generally, I feed my colonies less and less sugar ever since we did that sugar podcast last year. I've really changed the mentality of before, just fed them sugar 24/7, gave all of my colonies liquid feeders filled up with sugar, and now they just get sugar once a week. But yeah, Lynn, how often should you feed sugar to semi-colostral queens?
Good question. With all my ants get sugar once a week, like at the minimum, and with the semi-colostals, yeah. I'm not sure if I did things differently with them, if I gave them extra or if I gave them less. I'm not sure. I know the bull ants, they get a little bit extra some every now and then, because the cincta, the micro cincta, I want her to lay eggs again, so I'm trying to give her a little bit more energy, because she tried and failed and tried and failed and tried and failed, and now she's gonna try again. So
yeah.
And with the neck recepts, Peggy. Well, with when she had the larvae, she was not interested in sugar altogether. But now that the larvae are, well, I'm spoiling a little bit, but when now the larvae are pupated, and now she's interested in the sugars. So she gets it maybe around every 4 days or something.
So do you feed them protein every other day and sugar every 4 days then?
Well, she wasn't interested in the sugar, so I didn't really feel the need to give her sugars along with the protein when I fed her every 2 days, because yeah. now because of the larvae being pupae, she is not interested in protein anymore whatsoever, so she just gets the sugar every now and then. And when she had the larvae, she only wanted the protein, and she got sugar every week, once a week, but she wasn't interested in it at all.
It's interesting how they change the mentality of depending on they have larvae or if they don't have larvae. But it makes sense. It makes sense. They need to readjust. Again, I think it's important to know that with semi-colostral queens, the way the social stomach works is just very different. So you need to think twice to how you feed them compared to your normal ants. Just because, yeah, it's a little bit of a different thing. Saying that, I treat every single queen of mine exactly the same. All my colonies are on this Thursday protein, Sunday protein and sugar schedule. And I just seen in the past, I only fed all my ants food once a week and then took it out after 2 days. But I think it boosts pretty much all workers and all colonies types to just get food twice a week at least. And the bigger you can go, you can do more feeds. But I found a good solid. This works for me. It's been working well for multiple years after trying different systems. So it's just a simple thing that works for me. But Jake, in the beginning, you said that you had a lot of comments regarding the general how you keep them. Before we start the podcast, you said all of this. So is there anything you want to mention here towards the end of keeping semi-colostral queens?
No, but I got like some random... I just kind of thought the pros and cons of being semi-colostral.
Fire away then.
Yeah. Well, being semi-colostral is basically, in most cases, it means they're simple ants. Because being like fully colostral is something they evolved after being semi-colostral. But this is where that pogos, like I said earlier, I was like, oh, I've got something on pogos. I think it's Pogonomyrmex floridanus, maybe? Something like that it's called. And they are actually like semi-claustral pogos, but they're not simple ants. They kind of evolved to be fully claustral, and then they've evolved again to be semi-claustral. And I just thought that was kind of cool.
That's very strange.
Nerdy, but yeah, it's like, oh, they've evolved back to being semi-claustral. But yeah, I think the advantage is, though, as well, is like they can just make more elates, I guess. That's it, like, and more brood as well. Like a semi-claustral colony will have a lot more brood normally in its first wave of brood than a claustral colony.
Also, you don't really get the same type of nanitics. Well, you get the first generation of workers, but they're not made of the food of the queen's reserves. It's made of the food the queen have captured.
Yeah. They're not as kind of starved of nutrients as the normal ones.
Ah, exactly. Like, you get a lot of more of a healthy first generation ant. I mean, Manica rubida are exotic to me, but they're native to Europe. And if I compare them to Malaysia's Niger, my queen is about 1 year old. She has between 100 and 200 workers now, I think. Even more, perhaps. And she's doing extraordinarily well compared to any Malaysia's Niger I've kept for a year. I mean, they would have got a few workers before hibernation and a few workers after, and it would just be going slow and steady. But semi-claustrals, I think it's because you just get a queen that she needs to get this food. It's just like they're just a lot more active. They need to get the food because else they'll die. And it's like this mentality doesn't change with get the workers. They need to get the food, and therefore you just get some very solo hunters, generally a more active species, come from one species to another. And I really enjoy it. I just think they seem way more active than other workers, than other species. And maybe that's because they have inbuilt this kind of life hunting mentality, even though us keepers don't need to succeed that. We can just pre-kill food. But I personally think semi-claustral species are some of the coolest ones. I hate raising fully claustral queens because I never know what to do. Do I feed them in hibernation? Do I not feed them? Do I feed them when they arrive? Do I not feed them? What do I do? Do I disturb them? Do I just put them away? And semi-claustral queens, they pretty much from day one, I keep them like a fully grown colony. Food and protein and sugar twice a week. You know the deal now. And yeah, I have a lot of fun. That being said, they are not beginner friendly. You should have a little bit of experience with keeping ants before. I mean, you can't just jump straight into semi-claustrals, but you may run the risk of just losing a queen for no apparent reason. But going towards the end, Jake, it's time for some weekly updates. So is there any updates on the William and the general ant keeping corner?
Well, William is still doing excellent, of course, looking after all his sisters, amazing as ever. And he's also the most photogenic little worker ever. Like, I went to film him the other day, and every time I film him, it's like, literally, it's like, oh, a camera's there. What I'm going to do is I'm going to be a hero and like save one of my sisters or something like that. And yeah, he's doing brilliant. And all the other ants seem to be doing like lovely as well. The Pocono Mermix, I'm just going to, before I say, oh, she's doing absolutely great and is still alive, I'm going to just check.
Clever.
Yep, she's all good. And their numbers are starting to like head upwards now. I think they've two of them have already enclosed in the pogos. But it's all kicking off.
That's great. I just want to come back to something I completely forgot to say earlier regarding how to feed the sugar. Jake, you said that it was good to put some sugar on some cotton. What I generally do is, I've also had a lot of death in the past from feeding sugar directly. And the thing is, sometimes it turns sticky and then the ants become so happy they stick their head in there and they never take it out again and they die. What I do now is I take a little cotton pluck, I push a little bit of water on it because then it sucks up and the cotton starts sucking. And then I put the sugar on, because if you just put sugar directly on the cotton, sometimes if you at least pack it down to a ball, it'll just roll off the side. But if you give it a little bit of water already, it sucks it up a little bit easier. So that's how I feed all my colony sugar. A little cotton pluck, put a little bit of water on it, and then the sugar on it. As a sugar solution, you can do a sugar and water blend, or you can buy a solution. But Lynn, what are your weekly updates? How's the leaf cutters doing?
Well, the setup finally arrived and I finally built it, so I finally moved them into the setup, so that's awesome.
Lovely.
And that was a little bit scary for me because I had to topple over and upside down the cup that they were in, of course, and the cotton the fungus was actually stuck to that, what's it called? I already forgot the name of the thing. The container, the cup. It was stuck to the cup. And I was like, what do I do now then? So I very gently tried to scoop it a little bit loose. And the queen was still on it, of course. And the workers, they were all running around and being like, what are you doing? And then I dropped it and it was upside down. And the queen was unhappy that it was upside down. So that was nice. But there were still some bits stuck to the cup. So I tried to get those bits loose from the cup and put them on top of the fingers. And the queen was still angry. So that was nice.
What were your first reactions to actually touching the fungus with equipment?
It's really soft. It's like cotton candy soft. It's like it just collapses. Well, not really collapses, but you just it's weird. It's what's this brain mush? it's really yeah. That's exactly that.
Exactly. It's the most weird thing. You can't say if you've touched a leaf cutter fungus or played around with it until you've done it. It's just so somehow it doesn't really break apart, and yet it just breaks apart like thin air. It's really strange. But yeah, continue the weekly update.
The queen of that, because I made the hole a little bit too big in the cup, she used leaves to plug up the hole. Well, that didn't work out very well. But they are actually doing very well inside of this new setup. She's cutting. She's going outside of the cup and eagerly, because they're getting dandelion right now, and they are eagerly getting the dandelion. Well, she's eagerly getting the dandelion and placing the stuff everywhere and taking out the dried leaves.
But she is then a semi-claustral queen.
I was just going to say, like, a leaf cutter's claustral or semi-claustral. Like, physically, they look like they're fully claustral, but they must need to go and get leaves.
Well,
that's an interesting story.
Clearly, if she's going out getting leaves, they must be on the side of the semi-claustral, I guess.
They're not for the baby, though, are they? Like, they're not to feed the baby, I guess, no?
That's hard to say. We'll just see other queens just coming out, just, hang on, let me just go out and grab some leaves here, just come back home. Because I've always imagined they would be fully claustral, but, I mean, I guess not. If Lynn sees her coming out cutting, I guess that answers the question.
Like, yeah, she's an acro queen, of course, but I'm not sure what the difference is. Yeah, and of course, does she, because my queen, of course, has two workers already. Well, these workers are not doing anything at all. They're not cutting. They might be helping her grinding the cutted leaves into the paste. But because the workers are not going out to cut leaves, but did she raise these workers without getting leaves? That's what I'm wondering, because then she's fully claustral. Kinda.
It's a good question. It's a hard question.
It's a mystery. Yeah.
I know an Aunt Antex raised some other queens from single queens back when he started stocking leaf cutters at the first time. He will potentially know the answers to this question. Either way, Lynn, how's the bull ants doing?
Well, I already spoiled a little bit for Peggy, of course, because pretty much after the podcast that we recorded last week, I came to check and they were pupating. So now we have... Were they already pupating last time? I don't remember. But they're all fully pupated now, all seven of them. And I cannot really see them at all because I tried to open up the setup and clean out the glass, and Peggy was very angry with me for doing that. And then I was like, oh, and it's all nice and clean, and now I can see inside. And the very next day, it was already plastered up with the sand again. So, nice.
Lovely.
And Echo has three eggs again, but I need to knock on wood somewhere because, well, we know her story. She's starting, failing, starting, failing, starting, failing. So, let's hope that she this time manages to do it successfully.
Well, at least it did. Could you confirm all seven larvae? I think you had seven larvae, right? Did they all pupate?
Yes, but she has some of the pupae inside of this little connector thingy. So I cannot see them all, but I know that they all pupated.
Well, let's hope they don't die then, because, well, yeah, sometimes they just die and they open up very early.
Now we need to knock on wood. Don't do my colony.
So sorry. Yeah, finally, my weekly update is my Mysia Fulvipes have laid even more X. I think last podcast I said she had 3X, she now has 9X. And my Bullet Ant also went from 6 to also 10 or 9X now. My tribe just went from 20X to 0, but 4 larvae. So, yeah, a lot of things are happening. And last week I said that I'm going to receive a package all the way from Queen of Ants, located in Australia, and if everything goes to plan, which I really hope it does, that package should arrive tomorrow, as well as a Wakushi package. So yeah, a lot of small things happening. I guess this is where I can also do updates on my channel itself. I really want to do some shorts and all of this, but I just don't have the motivation, so therefore I've started these small daily updates almost of just some of the colonies. So yeah, I mean, I've started working on some scripts for a proper full video, but Let's see if it becomes a thing or not. But with that being said, that's been my update. And with that being said, I'm just gonna repeat myself. Jake, what are your final words of keeping semi-clustered queens?
just do it. I don't know. Yeah, don't be afraid of them, because it's not too difficult. But just make sure that if you're just starting out on semi-clustered, set an alarm on your phone. So, like, twice a week, you'll get reminded that I need to chuck a little bit of food in and sort them out, sort of thing.
Oh, I loved the little scream in the beginning, but yeah, not a bad shout. Give yourself some reminder or an alarm to remember a little bit extra feeding, because that is needed. Lynn, what are your final words?
Start small. Don't go right away into bull ants. Just try a manica for the first time, see how it goes, see if you like it. I think Myrmicas might be a little bit harder than Manicas, but I'm not too sure on that because I've never found it Myrmica from the start.
Jake will be able to answer that, I guess. Jake?
Yeah, I think Myrmica are definitely a bit more tricky than Manica, or they're devils. Like, if you're starting from just the queen, just try anything but Myrmica Rupra.
Well, that answers that.
Yeah. I think it's very well said. Don't try with bull ants, don't start with Harpignathas. Well, Harpignathas potentially you can start off with. But still, Manicas are cheaper, and it's a lot of the same routine you have to start now. Twice a week feeding if you've only kept fully clusterals, and it's great fun. I think my Manicas are almost my favorite colony out of all the crazy ones I keep, just because of the sheer growth I've had in 1 year. Like, it's nothing crazy if you look at, like, Nicobarensis and stuff like that, but I'm just so impressed that this is a European species performing so well and looking so active and crazy. I'd love to see them in the wild, because I'm a big fan of my Manica, and I'm not gonna lie, I hope once I have them in the new setup, I can make a video where I nickname the Giant Fire Ant. Wow, clickbait, yay! And then I can do a video on my Giant Fire Ant colony. yeah, I think they're super cool, super aggressive, super fun to keep. A recommendation to all who are entering the medium and keeping levels. But I want to say thank you for listening in. The AntPod releases new episodes every Wednesday, and if there's a topic you would like to hear about, be sure to send a message to the AntPod Instagram. And with that, you'll hear more from us at the AntPod next week.